Welcome to Hello Somebody, a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia, where we rage against the machine, where we raise our voices against injustice and stand up for justice, where we embrace hope and joy with an optimism for a brighter, more just future. Each week, I'll be dropping knowledge, whether it's a solo episode from me or a hearty discussion with esteemed guests doing great things in spaces and places of politics, entertainment, social justice, and beyond. We get real, baby. I mean, really real. We get honest. We get up close and personal for you. Yes, you. Because everybody is somebody. Before we begin, I want to give a special shout out to my team. Thank you, Sim, Tiffany, Sam, and the team over at Good Juju Studios, Erica England, Pepper Chambers, the hot one, and my social media team. Hello, somebody. It's yours truly yet again. I am so glad that you are here with me. It is always a pleasure to get more acquainted and catch up with some of my brothers and sisters and family and friends who come from similar and also sometimes unique paths, but we connect along the way. And today I am delighted to speak with Peter Marks. Can I say hello somebody again on that? Peter and I both had the amazing opportunity to work with and for the one and only Senator Bernard Sanders during his 2020 presidential campaign. And as some of you may know, or for my new listeners, I was a national co-chair for Senator Bernie Sanders' 2020 presidential campaign. And that campaign was something else. Both 2016 and 2020 changed the entire dynamics of politics as we know it today. And we are going to keep pushing and changing for the better. That is our commitment. And it is certainly not linked to one person, not me, not Senator Sanders, not one person or one cause. It is all causes. It is a lot of people together pushing towards justice. So Peter, as the head of product? You worked on the, you led the product on the tech team, right? On the campaign. Yeah. That's what you did. And you worked with stakeholders across the campaign, like organizing and fundraising, et cetera, to design and define what technology products the campaign needed to build. Two of the products Peter designed were BernieSanders.com and the Burn app. Burn, baby, burn. Ooh-wee comes to mind. Y'all know when I just can't put all the words, all my thoughts together, I just say, ooh-wee. And that Burn app was a success. And I just, he was just such a part of such a dynamic team. So I got to give a shout out to the one and only Chris Mabry too. Chris has been on several projects with me, and he is one of the toughest when it comes to fighting for justice, conscientious people that I know. And him and Peter work quite a bit together. Peter, I brought you in here a little early, but I'm really bringing you in right now. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Senator Turner, it's truly an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
Good. It's so good to have you. I think the last time we were together, I was on your show, and it was so unique to be able to talk about issues through the lens of some of my favorite songs. I'm tickled. I'm smiling from ear to ear right now every time I think about that interview, because it was such a beautiful and a refreshing interview for me, because I rarely get asked questions about the power of music and which songs I love. In my line of business, almost never do I get asked about music.
It's an important question. It's a really personal thing. And we love the playlist you put together. Yeah, there's some total gems you listed on that.
Thank you. No, I truly enjoyed it. And you know, the other day I was on CNN, and I know you will appreciate this. And I was asked the question, basically, you know, what do the Dems have to do to turn this around? They're kind of on the wrong path in terms of approval ratings and how people are feeling in this country with inflation and all the other pressures of life, including this pandemic. And I said, you know, the song from the group En Vogue is coming to mind, one of their songs, giving them something he can feel.
And I said, that's what this is about. The Democrats are going to have to give the people something they can feel so that they will know the love is real. And how do you do that? Through public policy. How about that? Let's cancel a little student debt. Let's have some Medicare for all, you know, and on and on and on. So just kind of reflecting on that, it made me think about our interview. Like, you can talk about politics through song. How about that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I remember when you quoted, I believe, LL Cool J at that rally in Queensborough Park.
I believe. Mama said knocked him out. Yes, I sure did. Don't come in a call. Come back. I've been here for years. Because, you know, that was right off of Senator Sanders. It was his first appearance after his heart attack, and people were counting him out. And what's such an appropriate song, and LL Cool J being a son from Queens too. It just felt so right. And it just came to me that day. I didn't plan it. You know, most people know that on the campaign trail, 9 times out of 10, I will be the one to intro the senator or be the person right before the person that intros the senator, depending on where we are. And that just came to me spiritually. Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years.
One of the things that really got me started in politics was being a music promoter. And one of the things I learned in music promotion is just how important that opening act is to get people fired up and in the mood. And you really saw that on that campaign. You literally had a lot of bands being the opening act to you and Senator Sanders to really just get people in the mood and excited about making change. And I think that's a really underrated part of movement building is just the excitement factor and that feeling of being there and a part of something. I think is really my experience what keeps people in the movement and engaged in it.
I agree with you. And I remember the senator often talked about wanting to put party in the work that we were doing. And I think people really didn't think about it. But if you do just pause for a moment to reflect on what he's saying, that even when you're doing hard work, there should be some fun aspect to it, something that makes you smile every now and then. And so, yeah, I mean, that is why, I mean, if we look at the music industry, it is why they have opening acts. That's why they have people who are professionals to warm up the show, to get the crowd in the mood, so to speak. They don't just come out there and just, they get people in the mood. Yeah, we got to do more of that in politics, God knows. I don't know what kind of mood we getting them in, but we got to get them in a mood to fight for justice, I guess. So Peter, I mean, how has the transition been from music promoter to tech to your fight for social issues? Or maybe I should say, let me frame that a better way. How have you been able to weave all of those aspects into the work that you do? Music, promoter, tech, politics.
Yeah, absolutely. It is an unusual path of sorts. But yeah, you know, I've been in the tech industry professionally my entire career. And while I enjoy the work, I think like there's a certain magic to technology, and it does play a role in a lot of important parts of society, including politics. You know, I was very disillusioned with a lot of the companies I was working for. I didn't think I viewed a lot of the stuff I was working for as being very anti-worker. It just didn't feel great inside for me for a lot of my career. And it was really kind of, I think in some ways, a part of my journey to work more in politics itself. And then at nights, my hobby is still promoting music events, mostly dance music events in my hometown of Portland, Oregon. And to me, like the hustle of getting people excited to see an artist you believe in and making sure they feel inspired by the event and following up with them about the next one, making sure they're plugged into the community, you know, that is kind of a form of community organizing. And I just didn't think of it in that way until I worked on the Bernie campaign, to be honest. So I was fortunate enough to get a job on the technology team with Chris Mabry, and worked, as you mentioned previously, on BernieSanders.com and the Burn app as both a designer and developer of those products. And, you know, it was my job to understand the organizing strategy to design these apps and websites. And I, you know, living in Washington, D.C., working out of that D.C. office with some of the most amazing organizers anywhere, I just was like a sponge, just absorbing all of their wisdom around, you know, what it meant to be successful for this movement through organizing and through technology. It was really such a special thing. And honestly, like one of the highlights of my life, having the honor to do that and work with so many inspiring people who really were there for the mission. And it wasn't some vibe of trying to get ahead. Like I felt a lot in the tech industry. There wasn't that kind of out for yourself attitude I found in the campaign. It really was a collaborative effort. And one of the most significant projects I worked on as the designer and developer was the Burn app, which I'm told was the largest relational organizing campaign in history. And that's really where I learned a lot about organizing. That informs a lot of my view of organizing, is that relational approach of using the relationships that you have to make change and inspire the people around you. And so, yeah. And by the time I moved back to my home state of Oregon after the campaign ended, I had sort of caught the organizing bug and was inspired to start doing that in my community. And that's why I started this organization, Rhythm Nation. Because like my community is a music community, and we're specifically focused on building power for young people through music.
Oh, and music is a universal language. Pick the tone that we're going to take to describe what music does. Music is everything. I mean, I don't know what life would be like. It would be pretty boring and lack emotion and feeling without music. I mean, just think, perish the thought that there would ever be human existence without some kind of rhythm, some music. Everything in life is a rhythm, you know, from how the sun rises to how it sets, and the moon and the stars and the ocean waves. Everything we do is a rhythm. So, you know, when you say Rhythm Nation, I'm thinking of the one and only Janet Jackson. We are a part of the Rhythm Nation, baby. Yes, we are. Yeah,
totally named after her 1989 single and album Rhythm Nation, which, you know, is a political jam. It's a dance music song about, you know, a multiracial movement for young people and people who are down to get down. And that was definitely the inspiration.
No, it's so fitting. And I'm seeing the dance moves right in my head right now. That was trailblazing. When that song came out and what she was saying in that song, and to the way that it pulled so many people in from different experiences. But we are a part of a rhythm nation. What's the rhythm? Is the rhythm love? Is the rhythm hate? Is it apathy? Is it hope? You know, we can talk about the different rhythms of life, but what kind of nation are we, both in our own homes, in our communities, in our cities, in our state, this nation, and also this world? What kind of rhythm, what kind of vibe are we putting out, you know, as human beings and at this point in time? What kind of rhythm are we right now, Peter? If you had to give us a rhythm, what rhythm are we right now?
Man, it's hard to speak for such a diverse country, but like there's a lot of different kind of vibes out there for sure. I think right now, at least I feel hopeful that we are hopefully on the cusp of delivering some significant change for American people through the Democratic majority in Congress. I'm hopeful that, you know, we're going to get past this pandemic, and part of that hope materializes itself in a return to in-person events, which is now, you know, increasingly a possibility. There's still, in my home state of Oregon, you know, we have rules around, you know, you got to be wearing a mask unless you're drinking a beverage, and most of the events around us are, you know, vaccine required or proof of a negative test. But, you know, I think at least in my community, that's brought out a lot of optimism. You know, being able to be together again, I think is a really powerful thing. I just quoted Janet again, being together again. I didn't even realize, but yeah, I like to think there's some upbeat rhythm right now.
Yeah, no, we're in the Miss Jackson's rhythm right now. You know, I mean, That is a hard question to answer. What rhythm are we in now? Maybe it's not just one rhythm, it's multiple rhythm streams going on at one time. I think at some point, a hopeful rhythm, but also a rhythm of people feeling down and out, overwhelmed, not being able to see past the pandemic, you know, or not being able to see past the immediate traumas that are going on. I mean, gas prices are up, food is up, people are working harder, longer. And also in the same rhythm, you have workers saying, hell no, we won't continue to take wages that don't give us dignity of life. We won't sign on a dotted line for a contract that does not make us better than we were the last time we signed the contract, and whether that is salaries or health benefits or work conditions, there is that rhythm playing too, that people are awakening to their value and saying, hell no, we won't go. You know, John Deere to nurses, I mean, workers all over this country and even all over the world, workers are rising up. So that's a rhythm in and of itself.
Absolutely. We've seen a lot of strikes here in the Portland area, most notably from the Nabisco factory here, right, and just a national effort.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is inspiring to see. Absolutely.
It is. And workers are unifying, whether they know it or not, but they are. And they are forcing the people who have the power to decide what type of salary one has, what their healthcare benefits, to really take another look at it. It's making it very hard for them to deny workers anything less. And I'm really happy to see it. I hope we continue to see more workers rise up and demand more, because it's good for them. And it's also good for the workers to come next to them and after them as well. So let's talk about some of your favorite songs and why.
Sure.
So a song when you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Gosh, like a celebratory song?
Yes. And while you're thinking, I did that one thinking of my 2-year-old grandson. Because I know they're going like, S&T, what are you talking about? When you're happy and you know it, clap your hands, stomp your feet, turn around in a circle. You know, kids, they have a natural rhythm too. And that rhythm is the kids are just optimistic, curious. They have no barriers at a certain age until we choke all of that curiosity and vitality out of them, and they become like everybody else. But to a certain age, there are no limits.
Yeah, you know, as for like a specific song, you know, so one of the things that got me into music is DJing, which I do as well. And I guess like one song that always kind of crushes it on the dance floor is this remix by this classic by Christopher Cross, Ride Like the Wind, which I just think is such a fun, like, you know, song to sing and feel like you're moving forward with something with. And yeah, that's like one that comes to mind that's just like a always works on the dance floor kind of thing.
All right.
That makes me feel happy.
What about when you're being reflective?
Being reflective. I'm electronic music is a big part of my life. It's something it's a lot of music I promote as electronic. My favorite electronic music list to oftentimes is one of the original artists, Kraftwerk, which is, you know, it inspired a lot of their work has inspired all kinds of music. Like some of the first hip hop tracks used Kraftwerk samples, and you know their music was very political. Like their 1982 album Computer World is basically about like the NSA and about how like, computer surveillance and even like without like really like overt lyrics, like it just puts off like that vibe of just like, man, this is a weird time we're heading into. And yeah, something about Kraftwerk's music really inspires me. It helps me kind of zone out. It's great music to do work to and just to think to. And I think part of that is just like the political message that comes through even without words.
Yeah. And linking music to activism is important. You know, the last poets kind of come to mind for me. When people are marching down the street, there's a cadence and usually some song that the leader picks, some rhythm, some call and response going on. And I know that you, on your activist side, Medicare for All is something that means a lot to you and your work. It certainly means a lot to me. You know, one of my dear friends right now, Peter, or she just got out of the hospital, but she was in the hospital recently, and just talking to her about how hard it was just to get service, to get the insurance company to approve something that the doctor said she needed. And although I know this to be a reality, I've been on the campaign trail stumping for it very strongly since 2015. I did a little bit before then, but certainly in earnest in 2015. But you're always constantly reminded about how broken this healthcare system actually is. And just the whole notion that that the doctor has to wait to get approval from the insurance company before they can treat you in certain instances. Like, that makes absolutely no sense to me. But yet we continue along this path of insanity in the United States of America. And you have been active on the stump, pushing your representatives to support Medicare for All. So talk to us about why you care so much about making Medicare for All a reality in this country, and share some of the experiences that you've had in your own state as an activist of galvanizing people and working towards pushing those who are elected to do the will of the people, which Medicare for All is extraordinarily popular across ideologies.
Yeah, you know, I have been doing some pressuring of my representative Kurt Schrader, who's one of the most conservative Democrats in Congress, specifically around allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices. He was one of the only Democrats to vote against a measure that would have allowed Medicare to negotiate all drug prices. And you know, one of the stories I've been sharing is just how I have an autoimmune disease. And I take thyroid medication every day for it, and yeah. How the price of a drug I was taking for like 5 years, all of a sudden it doubled, and then it tripled, and then it quadrupled, to the point where it's like, yeah, this is like bordering on unaffordable. And you know, fortunately, I'm a relatively privileged to be like a tech worker who makes a decent living, and I can kind of afford it, but it made me kind of question, like, gosh, like, what if I couldn't?
Yeah.
So you know, I worked with my doctor, and I transitioned medications, and that transition, like, it was just purely economic, and I was sort of warned, like, it could be a big deal if you transition medication. I just felt awful for weeks, and this was like, you know, during the pandemic, like not like the best like mental health time anyway to be like changing medications.
Sure.
And then sure enough, you know, like a year later, like this new medication I transitioned to just for the price, it's like now the same price as that original drug. And like, I went through that all for nothing. You know, it's frustrating, and it makes you appreciate, like, gosh, what if I didn't have, like, what if I couldn't afford this? Would I just give up on medication altogether? Would I just like let this condition like ride out and like not take anything for it? And what would that do? And it really made me reflect on that. So I actually do feel like Oregon has a pretty significant role to play in Medicare for All. And then not just with Kurt Schrader, but actually there's a strong movement in here to have Oregon be the first state to adopt a single payer health care program or Medicare for All. And actually, it's going to be on our ballots in 2022. We will have a constitutional amendment. Yeah. We will have a constitutional amendment that guarantees health care to all Oregonians. And it's not a specific policy, but it's a directive to our legislature to implement this policy. And just for some context to my home state of Oregon, you know, it's a lot of what you see in the media about Portland, you know, being this, like, kind of, as our former president put it, anarchist jurisdiction. You know, like, it's definitely a trying time in Portland, like a lot of places in America. Like, you know, there is more crime. You know, there is, like, a lot of, you know, tough stuff happening with homelessness. But, you know, like, it is like a stable place. And actually, I don't think that also speaks to how, like, purple Oregon is as a state. Like, we are not necessarily like a, you know, there is a Democratic majority. Like, it's a very diverse state in a lot of ways. And yet, like, a lot of really, some would say, like, radical ballot initiatives, like our, we became the first state to decriminalize all drug possession last year, which, you know, has huge consequences. It's going to mean 9,000 fewer drug arrests, which of course disproportionately impact people of color and poor people as a result of this policy. And we're investing more in rehabilitation. And you know, that's a policy that outperformed Biden across the state. You know, we passed that policy and people voted for that policy in counties that voted for Trump. Like, there is room.
Yeah.
And we see it in Oregon for people who you might label as a certain identity and who don't necessarily fall in line with, you know, conventional Democratic politics, you know, embracing policies that work for people in need. And, you know, that was a really great example of it. And I think if you look at Canada, you know, it started with one state to adopt the single payer Medicare.
I think it was Saskatchewan, I believe it was the province
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Funny name to say, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. And so Oregon, I'm so glad that you shared that with us, because California too is trying to pass single payer there. So we'll see what a great duel to have between states, which state is going to be the first to have a single payer system for its residents. And you're absolutely right. That in turn will absolutely help other states come along. And it is kind of sad, but important that states are taking it upon themselves and that they are not waiting for the federal government. And the reason why I say sad, Peter, because we know, like, anybody that wants to continue to pretend that they don't know what the hell is going on, that the kind of hurt that people face every single day, whether they don't have access to the drugs that they need, life-saving drugs, or drugs that help their quality of life be strong and stable. You know, you shouldn't have to be on deathbed to be able to afford drugs. And then also, if you need your prescription drugs just to make sure that your life is going very well, that is a beautiful thing. The pandemic, to me, should have just shook everybody. Like, even if you never agreed with it before, there is something that is cruel and unusual about continuing a course in the wealthiest nation on the face of the earth that does not provide universal health care for the people who live here in the face of a global pandemic. And it makes it hard for me to believe that beyond this pandemic, which COVID is going to be with us forever, just like the flu. I mean, it's just something we're going to have to learn to tame. We're trying to tame it so that we can live with it, much like the flu. But for me, Peter, if you can't get people to understand the importance of universal healthcare, or the importance of making sure that Medicare can negotiate lower drug prices for people in this nation, I don't know what else it is going to take to wake people up. The leaders that are elected, I mean, because the people are awake. Most people agree with us across political ideology. And when you said that the ballot measure was more popular to make sure that you decriminalize drugs in Oregon was more popular than even President Biden on the ballot, I think about what happened in Florida. Florida passed a $15 an hour minimum wage, even though that state actually voted for Mr. Trump. But it still passed a $15 an hour minimum wage. What does that tell us?
Yeah, I feel like it tells us how wrapped up in identities people can get, and how it can sort of obscure some of the real issues that impact people. And also just how well more direct democracy can work when you get people to actually, like, vote on the issues and, like, really, like, give them a chance, which, you know, I'm so glad that ballot measure systems exist for that purpose. You know, people's needs get realized in a lot of cases that they don't necessarily when you make them choose between these two, you know, political tribes and all the baggage that comes with that.
Right. And trying to force, what, 325, 330 million people into two narrow categories, who's blue, who's red, who's a Democrat, who's a Republican, that doesn't even make logical sense either. But you're right. Once you strip back the political, the label, who's Democrat, who's Republican, and just talk to the people strictly about the issue, we are going to find that what happened in Oregon and what happened in Florida and so many other places in this country become more of a reality where the people are standing up saying to the politicians, this is our wheel, and this is why this issue passed or that issue passed. And it is powerful. I'm glad that we have power referendum or putting initiatives on the ballot, taking it straight to the people. It is beautiful. So, Peter, as we are approaching the holiday season right now, you and I are having this conversation in November of 2021. I got to say that just in case if somebody happens upon us in 2025 listening to this interview, they'll know that we are in November, about a week before Thanksgiving in 2021. What song recommendations do you have for people going into the holiday? I couldn't resist that. Music, I should say. Any music recommendations?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I really look for over the holidays is to relax and let go. And even though, like, I'm in Oregon, I mean, it's pretty rainy and dark here in the winter. Which is why I like kind of like music that makes me feel like I'm on a beach in the, over the holidays, kind of like, you know, transport me to a different wavelength.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of the band Kruong Bin, which is it's a funny, hard to say Thai name, but yeah, they're an amazing band, and it definitely like puts me in like a more relaxed state just having their music on. So I'll call that out as a pick.
I'm sure you're introducing people to something new. I know you are for me. As soon as we are done, I am going to look up that band. And I would recommend, I don't know, Fantasia is coming to mind. She has such a wonderful Christmas album that she put out a few years ago, and I listen to it every single year. I just love Fantasia. I think she's my, you know, if I had somebody that sings like I speak, it would be Fantasia. She's my spirit. She's my spirit person in the song world. So definitely Fantasia comes to mind for me too, because she puts you in a soulful mood with all of her songs, but especially her Christmas music. Well, Peter, it has been absolutely our pleasure to have you with us on Hello Somebody. Thank you so much for joining me and talking about the issues that animate all of us. Thank you so much for your work in the movement, from working with Senator Bernie Sanders to the work you're doing in the tech world to your organization, Rhythm Nation. And if people want to find out more about Rhythm Nation, where should they go?
Sure. Well, our website, rhythmnation.us, has our podcast, which, you know, features an episode with you and a bunch of other amazing folks. Yeah, that's probably the best spot. We're Rhythm Nation PDX on social media. And yeah, you can find me at Peter Marks. And you can find my work that I do at Strive Digital at strivedigital.org. We make a text messaging tool for progressive organizations like Sunrise Movement and People's Action and other orgs at strivedigital.org.
That is so beautiful. So listen, you know where to find Peter. Look him up. And hey, think about joining Rhythm Nation. We are all part of a Rhythm Nation. Janet Jackson said it first. All right, send in love, keep the faith, and keep the fight. Hello Somebody is a production of iHeartRadio and the Black Effect Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.